This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. Thanks for being with us. And on this Monday, the last day of 2018, we begin in El Paso, Texas, the city at the center of the humanitarian crisis at the southern border. A city just shy of 700,000 people that sits along the Rio Grande, El Paso has four customs and border protection ports of entry. Across the river, there's sprawling Ciudad Juarez in Mexico. El Paso is under scrutiny after two migrant children, 7-year-old Jacqueline Kaal Makin and 8-year-old Felipe Alonso Gomez, died while in CBP custody. Jacqueline died in a hospital in El Paso, while Felipe was originally detained at a Border Patrol post near the city. Border Patrol later moved him to New Mexico, where he died. And it has also become a city where federal officials have released thousands of migrants who have successfully completed the first step in applying for asylum. Some have been let out at bus stations without coats or money, leaving aid organizations scrambling to find them food and shelter. In fact, more than 24,000 migrants have been released into El Paso since October. That's five times the number released in the same period last year. And El Paso Mayor Dee Margo told Fox News on Friday that there needs to be action in Washington.
Our immigration policy stinks. No one in Washington on either side of the aisle has had the fortitude to deal with it historically. And it's about time somebody steps up and develops a little manhood on the way and determines what they need to do, irrespective of the political fallout.
A little manhood, huh? As the director of the advocacy group Hope Border Institute in El Paso, our next guest, Dylan Corbett, finds himself dealing directly with the consequences of a failed system. The organization has been coordinating with other groups to find shelter and food for the migrants released by immigration officials. Welcome, Dylan.
Thanks for having me.
And I'm also joined by Bob Moore. Bob is a freelance reporter covering the border for The Washington Post and Texas Monthly, and he's based in El Paso. Bob, thanks for joining us again on the show.
Thanks so much. I appreciate being here.
So, Bob, let's start with you. El Paso has been taking in migrants for years. Can you tell us a little bit about this recent spike?
This really began a couple of months ago, starting in October and then kind of growing from there, where we've had several hundred Central American migrant families each week entering through El Paso, for the most part surrendering to Border Patrol agents, then being detained by the Border Patrol, then processed through ICE, and then released into the community through a non-governmental organization called Annunciation House, where they're housed and fed for a couple of days before they move on to their families elsewhere in the United States. In recent weeks, the pace of release has really increased dramatically. We went from about perhaps 700 people a week in late summer to close to 2,500 people this past week.
Bob, I'm just wondering, you know, we're hearing at least the rhetoric from the administration is that they have made it more difficult for migrants to come into the United States precisely because they want to deter them from doing so. I am a little bit confused about why, since October, 24,000 migrants have since been released into El Paso. Can you explain what's happening here?
Because migrant families are crossing in record numbers. It's important to remember, though, that the total number of unauthorized crossings at the southern border is still far, far below peak levels of the 1990s and early 2000s. But what we are seeing now are these families from Central America fleeing violence and poverty and coming to seek asylum in the United States. It's still possible to cross the border. It's a difficult journey for many. The policies that have been adopted, not just by this administration, but by past administrations, have forced many of them to make far more difficult journeys into very remote areas of the border. In our area, they're crossing most heavily in southern New Mexico to the west of El Paso, where they're going through a very dangerous journey through the desert, which creates a lot of peril for them. But because of the situation they're leaving, it's worth the risk to so many of these families to make that dangerous journey.
Bob, what does being released signify for these families? Does it mean that they've since gone through the process, they've been cleared, and now they can live in the United States?
They've passed the initial stage in a very difficult asylum process, and that's called a credible fear interview, where they're able to demonstrate to an asylum officer that they have credible fear of persecution if they're returned to their home country. When they're released, they're allowed to travel in the United States. They tend to go join family that's already here. It's important to note that once they are released, they are here legally in the United States, no matter the rhetoric you might hear. Because of the backlog in immigration courts right now, the asylum process will probably take, for most of these people, 2 to 3 years to play out.
Dylan, I want to bring you in here. Let's talk a little bit about, if you could, about what aid organizations are doing when you are informed of a group of migrants who have been released. What happens next?
Sure. So El Paso has long been providing assistance to migrants who are passing through our community, to migrants who have been released by the authorities, like these asylum-seeking families that we've seen released into the El Paso community lately. These families are in need of everything from a hot meal to logistical support so that they can call family members and contacts around the country so that they can plan the next leg of their journey. They need a change of clothes. Many of them who have been in the CBP holding cells haven't been able to have a shower or change their clothes in several days. They need hot food. They need nutrition. Some of them do need medical care and medicine. So those are the type of services that the community is stepping up and offering to these people.
Bob, on December 10th, after Jacqueline's death, but before DHS had publicly disclosed it, the CBP commissioner, Kevin McAleenan, had asked for help from Congress. Let's take a listen.
We're designed to process single adults. You'll see diapers and baby formula and children's food. Right now at Paso del Norte in El Paso Port of Entry, you will see kids in the officer break room watching a movie and being cared for by officers. This is not a system that was designed for the arrival of kids and families and the numbers we're seeing. We've worked with Congress to request additional support for child medical care, child mental health and welfare for those arriving, even in that short period of time that we're interacting with these children. It's a critical area that we need to continue to improve.
Bob, you know, one of the things we've heard from the administration has also been that these facilities are not prepared to take in children. You cover the border every day. What have officials been telling you about what they need to support this this increasing group of folks?
It's an interesting question because Commissioner McAleenan clearly outlined the problem in those comments to Congress, which interestingly came 3 days after Jacqueline died. But Commissioner McAleenan did not tell the congressional committee about her death. As a matter of fact, the administration tried to keep it a secret, essentially, until my colleague Nick Miroff and I, writing for the Washington Post, found out about it. So you have some rhetoric coming out of the administration, but there's really not any action matching that. Even from the president, all you hear when talking about the needs on the border is wall, wall, wall. CBP has known for 4 years that the face of migration on our southern border is changing. They've made no attempts to make some of the changes that are necessary to provide Border Patrol agents on right on the border the tools and the training they need to take care of this situation. We still have an immigration enforcement system that's built largely around trying to stop single Mexican males from coming into the country seeking work. That's a problem that has not been a significant issue for more than a decade. Rather, now we have these families coming. Despite all of that, we're still shoving families into these tiny holding cells that were meant for single persons to be held for a few hours.
Well, and of course, we've heard from the administration, we've heard both from President Trump and Kirstjen Nielsen. Dylan, President Trump over the weekend tweeted, and I'm quoting here, that any deaths of children or others at the border are strictly the fault of the Democrats, and quote, the two children in question were very sick before they were given over to Border Patrol. I also want to bring your attention to comments that Kirstjen Nielsen made a couple of weeks ago where she was unable to quantify the number of people who had died or who were in custody. What are your thoughts on that, Dylan? I mean, there is a lot of partisanship right now in Washington, but do you think Washington needs to do something despite this to help the situation at the border?
Yeah, my immediate thoughts are that those are highly insensitive comments, if not perverse comments. But they're reflective of something that transcends this administration. What we've been talking about is that the precisely because we politicize the border, because of the border politics that transcends just this administration, and because of the policy choices that we've made for many decades here on the border, we're not able to respond to the current reality of the border, which is now we're looking at the large presence of families passing the border. In November, 60% of all border apprehensions were of families. What we have been doing over the last couple decades, and the Trump administration has intensified, is we have been applying a sort of a strategy to militarize the border. And what I mean by that is we focused only on enforcement. We focused only on removal. We focused only on things like deterrence. I remember in 2014 when there was a spike of family arrivals during the Obama administration. The Obama administration explicitly took a quote-unquote posture of a strategy of deterrence to stop this. Unless we make the investments that are needed, unless we change course and respond to the realities on the ground by investing in things like the infrastructure that's needed on the border, in ports of entry to be able to respond to the crossing of families, we're unfortunately going to see that there are going to be deadly results. We need to take a step back. We need to stop politicizing the border. And we need to make real policy decisions that are going to respond to the realities of the flows of migration.
Dylan Corbett runs the Hope Border Institute, and Bob Moore is a freelance reporter who covers the border. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.